In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Friday, February 3rd, 2017 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Mark Burnett, the Christian creator of The Apprentice television show on NBC, introduced President Donald Trump yesterday morning at the annual National Prayer Breakfast, who joked about his replacement needing prayer to boost his sagging ratings.
We had tremendous success on The Apprentice, and when I ran for president, I had to leave the show. That's when I knew for sure I was doing it. And they hired a big, big movie star, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to take my place, and we know how that turned out. The ratings went right down the tubes. It's been a total disaster, and Mark will never, ever bet against Trump again. And I want to just pray for Arnold, if we can, for those ratings, okay?
When Trump got into the meat of his remarks, he told the religious leaders gathered that his administration will, quote, do everything in its power to defend and protect religious liberty in our land, unquote. The president also committed himself once more to, quote, totally destroying, unquote, the Johnson Amendment, so that pastors may, quote, speak freely and without fear of retribution, unquote. President Trump called this freedom a God-given right.
We are not just flesh and bone and blood. We are human beings with souls. Our republic was formed on the basis that freedom is not a gift from government, but that freedom is a gift from God.
The Trump administration has drafted a religious freedom executive order that would exempt Christian businesses from paying for abortifacients and contraceptives that could destroy the life of a fetus in the womb. The order has yet to be signed by the president. Two Republican senators announced they will vote against Betsy DeVos, Trump's pick for Secretary of Education. Senator Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski pointed to DeVos's support for vouchers and charter schools as a negative. That brings her confirmation vote in the Senate to a tie of 50-50, in which case Vice President Mike Pence would break the tie. The Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church is calling on the Russian parliament to ban abortion in that country. According to the tablet, Patriarch Kirill says he has signed a petition calling for the end of the, quote, legal murder of children before birth, unquote, and an end to state-sponsored abortions. Under the communists, Russia turned into the nation with the highest abortion rate in the world, which is now at 73 abortions per 100 births. Columbia University is reeling from a wave of student suicides, 7 in the last few months. The New York Post points to highly competitive academics as the cause of the rash of suicides. Romans 3 describes the world without God. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their ways, and the way of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Mexicans are not happy about the prospect of a border wall on the Mexican-American border. They are making their voices heard with campaigns to boycott American companies like Starbucks, McDonald's, Walmart, and Coca-Cola. The hashtag Adios Starbucks has been rising in popularity since Trump became president. West Virginia and Kentucky now make up 2 of the 7 states with only 1 abortion-killing facility. The second-to-last Kentucky mill was shut down on January 27th. After investigations found that they were doing abortions without a license. Psalm 37:10 says, "For yet a little while, and the wicked shall not be. You will carefully look for him, and he will not be found." An Indian Christian evangelist is not expected to survive after being harassed by Indian police and a mob of Hindu men on January 21st. Dr. Swami came home and suffered a brain hemorrhage that very night. The World View spoke to William Stark of International Christian Concern about the story.
What happened was on the 21st, he woke up and he did what he normally did. He was a part of the Gideon International. So he would take New Testaments to a park, and he would distribute them for free to people who wanted them. Now, on the morning of the 21st, he had a group of men corner him and harass him for doing this. For a number of hours, they harassed him like that. Afterwards, they forced him to ride with them to a local police station, where they accused him of forcibly converting people to Christianity.
Stark said the National Constitution of India does contain a clause that allows Christians to share their faith.
At this point, it's a lot of folks in India, specifically Christians, who just feel they keep getting attacked and no one's doing anything about it. The state government and the national government are talking about it. So they feel like this attack on the pastor and his condition, I think, was just the straw that broke the camel's back in a lot of ways.
Dr. Swami is 47 years old. Please pray for a miracle for his family and for his attackers. And that's The Worldview in 5 minutes on this Friday, February 3rd, in the year of our Lord, 2017. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five. We raise our kids out here on the eastern plains of Colorado with a biblical worldview, and we try to equip them with the ability to distinguish between that which is good and that which is evil, that which is right, that which is wrong, especially with the pop culture of the day. I wrote a book called The Tattooed Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Say About Pop Culture, in which I think Christians need to be extremely discerning about very powerful systems that are working all around us and have the ability to take millions upon millions, if not tens of millions, of persons down towards wherever the Pied Piper of Hamelin is taking them these days. Well, today we want to look at the movies from 2016, just very briefly go over a number of them, the good, the bad, the ugly. And the first I want to start with what I call the true life stories, the historical stories that are told through the movie screen. Now, these true life stories are historical stories where right and wrong seem to be a little bit more obvious. And God is sometimes a little clearer in the metaphysics because it's hard to escape the providential hand of God over real history. Why, Steve? Steve Vaughn in studio with me right now. Why is it hard to escape the providential hand of God over real history?
Well, because you're seeing it all over the place.
Because
it's obvious.
Because God is the one who dictates what goes on. This is his story. Have you heard that expression before? History is his story.
His story, yes.
It's his story because God is writing the story. God is directing the story. God's purposes are unfolding throughout history, and over time, all things work together for good in this amazing quilt that he is sewing throughout history. Well, my friends, let me give you a couple of examples of great stories that are put to the screen. Now, again, not always well, but there have been a number of them over the last couple of years. Perlaska, something we watched recently at our home, and I believe it was produced a couple of years ago. But Perlaska is a story of an Italian businessman who saved about 65,000 lives of Jews in Hungary, really probably the most heroic man who saved the most numbers of people in recent history, perhaps in the history of the world, if you're talking about just a mere man who, well, there's the exception of Esther.
Right.
Of course. So Esther would be an example. But Perlaska's a story about a man almost nobody's heard about. He's the poor, wise man who saved the city in Ecclesiastes, and no man remembered who he was. Perlaska's a good example of that. He saved more Jews than anybody else in World War II. And there's an Italian movie that came out with Italian subtitles, and it's very much an engaging movie. It definitely is an inspiring movie, because here's a man who, from a Christian background, certainly from Italy, he's helping Jews. He's saving Jews. That's a testimony.
It's a powerful testimony to the Jews. Now, here's what's also interesting about Prelaska is that nobody remembered who he was, and he faded into obscurity for about 45 to 50 years until somebody found him, I believe, in 1998. Somebody finally found him.
Yeah, it's actually earlier than that.
Okay.
And they found him in, like, 1988, and he died in 1992.
Okay, so that was it. But the point being that here's probably the most heroic man of the last 100 years. And he faded in obscurity. Nobody remembered who the poor wise man was. But they finally found him in 88 and made a movie on his life. A businessman who did what he could to buy the freedom of so many Jews. I think some 5,000 Jews. And then he pretended to be something of an appointment of ambassador from Spain. Although he was in Italian, he claimed to be associated with the ambassador of Spain and, you know, being something of a diplomat for the Spanish embassy. And on that basis, he saved 60,000 Jews. They were planning to burn down the ghetto, surround the ghetto, and shoot anybody who is trying to get out. But he approached the Nazi that was leading this, or the fascist that was leading this, and threatened that they would imprison all Hungarians, all 10,000 Hungarians in Spain, if he went on with that that plan to destroy the Jews in the ghetto. And evidently there were only like 30 or 40 Hungarians in Spain at the time, but he was a negotiator, and he did his best he could to defend the Jews. And it's truly an inspiring story. So I'm thankful for these stories.
Yeah, wise as serpents.
that God raises up, and by his common grace.
Yes.
God raises up heroic men who accomplish really amazing things, such as what Prelaska did. Here's another story of a man by the name of Desmond Doss. And there's a movie produced recently by Mel Gibson called Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
And Hacksaw Ridge is the story of Desmond Doss. Desmond Doss being something of a conscientious objector, yet one who wanted to, quote-unquote, fight for his country, defend his country in World War II, and would not want to carry a rifle. He didn't want to have anything to do with killing, but he wanted to become a medic, and he became a great hero in World War II, one of the most outstanding heroes of World War II. Now, Hacksaw Ridge, the movie itself, male immodesty, terrible male immodesty, language issues, violence issues. It's true that Gibson edited out the F words, the misuses of Jesus' name, but as is true of most military movies, profanities are plentiful throughout this flick. And so I would caution people on this. Also, of course, Mel Gibson is given to extreme violence and the portrayal of extreme violence in war, and this movie is no exception to that. The story, though, about Desmond Doss is somewhat inspirational. There's no question about it. As I said, a pacifist, a Seventh-day Adventist of sorts, he saved 75 men on the Maeda Escarpment, where it was up on a cliff, and he lowered some 75 men off this cliff one night. And he did it, my understanding is, single-handedly. Everybody else had abandoned the cliff. They had all removed to the camp, but he continued throughout the night and saved 75 men who had been injured.
And he was given the Medal of Honor, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Desmond Doss had a sharp memory of the Ten Commandments hanging in his parents' home. So he was especially taken by the Sixth Commandment illustration of Cain murdering Abel, and he was also very much affected by a fight that apparently occurred between his father and his uncle, in which his father almost took his uncle's life. So Doss swore off guns. I don't think it was that the Seventh-day Adventists are entirely conscientious objectors. I don't believe they are. But he was, because of his background and some of the things that his mother had taught him. And I think it's appropriate that a man might swear off guns. It's appropriate to take a personal vow from time to time, which he did. And so he just did not want to carry a gun, but he wanted to save lives. He felt a calling to save lives. And save lives he did.
Yes.
On the Maeda Escarpment that night. So it's impressive to hear these stories about these men. Now, throughout the movie, he does persevere against pretty significant persecution, physical, psychological abuse at the hands of his fellow infantrymen who apparently were not impressed with him not carrying a gun. He endured several attempts by his superiors to have him discharged from the military as well, so his perseverance throughout is impressive. He seemed to be a man of faith. He seemed to be calm and cool. This was the way he's portrayed in the movie, but I think also in the books that we read about him, he seemed to be a man of some self control and did not render evil for evil, but did what Jesus commanded him to do, and that was to pray for those who despitefully use you. And so Desmond Doss was able to survive under a fair amount of persecution. He was also mocked on the battlefield for his Christian faith, but he never wavered. He only violated the Sabbath day just once. Apparently, his captain, Glover, told him that he had to renew an assault on Hacksaw Ridge on a Saturday. But there was a scene in the movie in which he is standing apart from the others, and he's praying. And they're respecting that. They're reverently respecting this man as he prays. That was an important thing. The captain said, "Everybody hush. Desmond is praying." And some, yeah. And even at some point, his superior called him on the radio and said, "Aren't you guys taking the ridge? We're not right now. We're holding off." He said, "Well, why are you holding off? We're waiting on Desmond Doss." "Well, what is Desmond Doss doing?" "Desmond Doss is praying, and you're waiting for him to end his prayers." "Yes, I am, sir."
So he did gain some respect.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. And Mel Gibson provided him something of respect for what he did. Also, at some point, he recited a portion of Isaiah 40. So examples of a Christian who had something of a positive influence as portrayed positively by a rather sinful and wicked military force.
Yes.
The military force itself is portrayed as being sinful. Wicked, rather not God-fearing. But here's one man who stands. Here's one man who is an example of a Christian, and certainly a man of great courage and faith. So here's a story of Desmond Doss. Is the story worth telling? Is it worth reading these books? I think it's better to just read the books. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. Let me give you the example of The Finest Hours. The Finest Hours is a story of a Coast Guard hero. Probably the most outstanding rescue of all time, as far as a Coast Guard is concerned. And again, the movie came out last year. These rescue movies, these hero movies came out over the last year. And as it turns out, Disney produced the movie, and Disney pretty much trashed the story, sadly.
Yeah, and that's Disney for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think Disney did a worse job than Mel Gibson did with Desmond Doss. Well, The Finest Hours is a story of a man who did an amazing rescue in some of the worst waters out on the East Coast that anybody has ever confronted in any of these rescues. And he did it in a tiny little boat, and he rescued more men than they ever imagined he would. I think it was 40, 50, 60 men on a tiny little skiff. And as it turns out, the film did mention Psalm 23, but they're still taking God's name in vain throughout, which, again, is an illustration that you've got apostates, Disney's apostates, the producer, the director, are approving of the taking of the name of God in vain. And for that reason, I would say this movie is something you've got to be careful with. But Bernie Weber, now if you read the real story about Bernie Weber, you're going to find that he believed that Providence had placed him there at that moment, at that time. And as he was riding the waves, I think he was riding these 30, 40 foot waves to get over to the ship where he was really working the rescue. He said he thought about the thousands of sermons his father had given while growing up. He was the son of a pastor.
Yeah.
So there he was in the boat thinking about the thousands of sermons his father had given him while growing up. They had all prepared him for this moment. Reverend Weber had wanted his youngest son to serve God, and now he was serving God. Now, this is what's going through his mind. See, again, we don't get flashbacks to his father's sermons in the Disney flick.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
We're not going to get that. Weber and the crew began to sing. Now, what did they sing? They sang something of, I don't think it was a raunchy thing, but it was kind of a sailor song in the Disney flick. But what did he really sing? Weber and the crew began to sing. Now, here again is the book on Bernie Weber. Friends, get the book, not the movie. Get the book first. Bernie Weber, the great hero of the Coast Guard, in the finest hour, they began to sing. He could think of no more poignant hymn than Rock of Ages.
Wow.
The singing subsided, the men grew silent, and Weber motored the CG-36500 into the bar.
Wow.
That's the story of Bernie Weber. At the end, of the story, his whole body was shaking. He cried and thanked God for guiding them home. Now, that's not in the movie either.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Disney purged it all. Then there's the story of Sully, the Captain Sullenberger that was produced in movie form and film form last year. The man who landed his plane on the Hudson River in the dead of winter and saved the entire crew and all passengers.
Yeah.
A pretty inspiring story. No question. Inspiring story. But God's name again misused. Jesus' name abused as well. And no thanks to God, again, just the glorification of human heroism.
Yeah.
That, my friends, those are some of the positive movies or positive stories that came out and were publicized last year. But again, many redacted to the point at which their Christian profession is pretty much put on the back burner. Also, last year you had Ben-Hur, and we did a review on Ben-Hur, where forgiveness was a theme towards the end of it. And something of an improvement in that sense, but more depictions of Jesus and a violation, perhaps, of the second commandment in the present Ben-Hur versus the one that was produced some 40 years ago. We'll be back next with a little more on the bad and the ugly from last year's movie fair. We'll be back again in just a minute.
Time is limited, especially for fathers who are juggling work, leading their families, and keeping up with the busyness of life. But we know that time with Dad, especially for boys, is essential to raising the leaders we need for the future. Finding it tough to spend quality time with your son? Come to the Father-Son Retreat this September and experience the luxury of 4 days of quality time. It's just you, your son, and other dads and boys at one of America's most beautiful and exciting mountain lodges for a weekend retreat near Winter Park, Colorado. With solid teaching, manly fellowship, mountain activities, and plenty of time to talk and just be together. Each year, the lives of boys and their dads are forever changed by the impact of the relationships and truth from the Father-Son Retreat. Will you make it a part of your discipleship this year? Register now at www.coloradofathersun.com.
And we are back on the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you. Steve Vaughn also in studio. A couple of homeschooling dads assessing the cultural fair from 2016 and 2017. And Steve, now we're going to move from the true story, real story, some of the stories in which we get some real heroism and some depiction of Christians in recent history who have accomplished some amazing things. And now we move on to the bad and the ugly.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, these movies had 10 times the box office receipts of anything that was kind of half a decent.
Yeah.
The bad, the ugly is upwards of $1.2 billion per movie, $800 million, $400 million. It's the big major motion pictures. And almost without exception, sci-fi and fantasy. Without exception, superhero. And it turns out the 2017 movie fair, I was just taking a look at what's coming out for 2017. I think it's 8 or 9 superheroes. It's fantasy. It's sci-fi. That's pretty much it. That's what you're going to get in 2017. Almost without exception. We are definitely moving more towards the escapistic sci-fi fantasy. Let's move on to our own world, build our own metaphysic, and hopefully achieve total autonomy from God's system of ethics.
Yeah, we can't create our own utopia. We can't create our own perfect world. So let's do it in film.
We'll do it on the movie screen.
That's right.
And these are the things that are bringing in the box office receipts, not just in America, but the international box office as well. And the number one film of the year, of course, was Star Wars. Again,
yeah.
Star Wars. And again, it's a bad metaphysic. It's the Eastern metaphysic that we've talked about many times. And this time with an added strong egalitarian flair to it. That is, women in combat, really, really, really important to modern man and to the modern empire. And that's what you get with Star Wars, the number one box office receipts for the year. Now, again, The Bad, The Ugly coming out last year, Star Wars, also Captain America Civil War. We've referred to this before. This was up there as well. I think it was number two for the international box office receipts, perhaps number one for the national, at $1.2 billion of receipts. Captain America Civil War, biggest blockbuster of the year for America, and 27 instances where God's name is taken in vain. Turns out superheroes believe in Jesus.
Yeah.
Superheroes believe in Jesus. Why? They take his name in vain and shake their fist in his face because they are rebelling against God and his anointed, saying, let us shake their bands asunder. Let us break their cords from us. This is what they're saying, my friends. This is what superheroes do. They set themselves up against Jesus. And yes, they're apostate. They're just apostates is all they are, pretending to be Sikh superheroes in a post-Christian age. That's all it is. Just remember, this is a post-Christian age, and they're still shaking their fists in the face of Christ. So keep that in mind. These movies have the stamp of apostasy. Also, the hopeless tension between determinism and indeterminism really was probably so markedly presented in Captain America Civil War, more so than any movie I've seen in the past. Bucky is forced to murder by mind control in a deterministic world, where also people are killed as collateral damage in an indeterminate world as the Avengers fight the anarchical terrorists. So you have the both aspects of determinism. Man has no control over what he does right or wrong because he's determined to do so, and then man has no responsibility for his moral actions because of an indeterminism in the world around. So again, man is stuck. Pagan man, humanistic man, is stuck constantly between the deterministic and indeterministic tension in order to resolve all moral obligations. So keep that in mind, that this is a self-conscious worldview that is woven into the movie by the geniuses that put Captain America Civil War together. This isn't just a shoot 'em up, good guy, bad guy flick. Anybody with half a brain should realize there's something more going on in a $1.2 billion major blockbuster for 2016. Every movie, my friend, has something of a worldview. Certainly this one does. And we're also left between the either-or fallacy on anarchy and tyranny in a humanistic world as well, where, you know, you've got the tyranny, you get the anarchists going up against the tyrants, and something similar is also seen in the movie Suicide Squad, which also raked in some $745 million. It's a nihilistic, a Nietzschean on steroids, where they go out in a blaze of glory, but it's the glorification of the bad guys. But you're really sicking the libertines on the despot. Those who disobey God's laws in their individual lives take on those who disobey God's law in the corporate governmental sphere. So it's, again, the anarchist who is breaking God's law with impunity in his own life is taking on the despot. And whose side are we on? Of course, you're on the side of the libertines.
Right.
So, again, it's the either-or fallacy going on in Suicide Squad as well. And bottom line here, friends, these are the bad and the ugly from 2016. Deadpool raked in $800 million. It's up around number three, number four for total box office records. I think it broke some five or six box office records for an R-rated movie.
Wow.
It was huge. It was well beyond 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it is. Reviewers called it extreme sexual perversion. The film producer used the term pansexual, which means you're completely out of the box and, you know, any kind of
anything
sexuality
goes
with whatever you can even describe as completely legitimate here. The Bible calls it giving themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. Ephesians 4. So that's what they did with Deadpool. $800 million. The movie winked at pedophilia and there were 75 F words. God's name was abused. Jesus' name was abused. It was a mess. It was a total mess. Well, that's, of course, the breaking out into pop culture, a sexual decadence that would be completely something that would not even be imagined in the year 1950 or 1960. This is, of course, the rebellion of the present age. This is total sexual license of the 2010s. Deadpool raking in $800 million, breaking all kinds of box office records for an R-rated movie, and doing so with all kinds of impunity and destroying any kind of a common grace moral ethic that might have existed for 2,000 years. This is what is happening even as we speak, my friends. This is the Nietzschean worldview. This is the godless worldview going into the mass culture and being sold wholesale all across the world in our day. Also, many positive representations of homosexuality, mainstream kid movies and adult movies in 2016. Independence Day Resurgence, a very pro-homosexual movie glorifying feminism, of course. All sorts of gender confusion. Star Trek Beyond broke more barriers last year as well. It was a $343 million box office receipts, but they introduced homosexuality with Mr. Sulu, the Oriental representative of the crew, outed as a homosexual, complete with a picture of another man and a child. So that was a follow-up, of course, to Star Trek Into the Darkness with its cross-species mating that came out last time. So we move from cross-species mating to homosexual mating in Star Trek. Again, my friends, do not minimize this revolutionary selling to the mass culture the extreme decadence of homosexuality. This was not happening with Star Trek in the 1960s and 1970s. This is happening now. It happened in 2016. And, of course, slight homosexual references in Finding Dory and Zootopia and so forth. So, my friends, here as we end this edition of the Generations broadcast, let me use Proverbs 1 and Proverbs 2 to help us understand what pop culture does when it pulls in so many evangelical Christians into its wake as they watch Independence Day, as they watch Deadpool, as they watch Star Wars, Star Trek, and Captain America Civil War. As they watch these things, they're following the ideologies and the worldviews and the religious perspectives of many movie producers. And this is what Proverbs 1 says, "Enter not into the path of the wicked. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. For they sleep not except they have done some mischief, and their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall." And that, my friends, happens every day with pop culture, thanks to Hollywood and those that are self-consciously anti-God, and you know, because they take his name in vain throughout their movies, and they do it with impunity. Well, that's the Generations Radio broadcast for today. And I would encourage you to my book, The Tattoo Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Say About Pop Culture. Available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. Be sure, if you have any contact whatsoever with pop culture, with films, with music, or whatever it is, whether it be in church or out of church, whether it be in the movie theater or out of the movie theater, be sure you discern what is happening with pop culture in its mode, in its presentation, and its message. Get a copy of the book, The Tattooed Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Say About Pop Culture, at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.